Now, we turn to disease detection. A new macular pigment screening tool has been developed, one that can be used in an optometric practice to easily assess a patient's risk of age-related macular degeneration. With us now is the lead researcher on this project.
Hi, my name is Shelby Temple. I'm an honorary researcher at the University of Bristol and the chief science officer at Azul Optics Limited. My background is in visual neuroscience, and my most recent research has involved the human ability to perceive the polarization of light as a visual phenomenon known as Heidegger's brushes. This research has led me to develop a new technique for assessing the density of macular pigments in the living human eye, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about today.
The presence of macular pigments, carotenoids found in the retina around the fovea anterior to the photoreceptors, has been known about for decades. They appear to have a protective role in that they absorb shorter wavelength, potentially phototoxic visible light, and also act as an antioxidant, reducing degenerative processes. They may also play a role in vision, specifically in contrast sensitivity and glare reduction. Two of them, lutein and zeaxanthin, are fully derived from the diet, while a third, mesozeaxanthin, is derived from lutein within the retina. Accurate measurement of the pigments is useful clinically as a means of assessing macular protection, especially in those susceptible to degeneration, and for assessing the impact of any dietary intervention. Dr. Temple, can you tell us again about the known role of macular pigments?
Yeah, macular pigments are your eye's natural protection against short wavelength, high energy, visible light, and they act as your eye's internal sunglasses, protecting the fovea and the macula, which are arguably the most important part of your retina, because this is the part that, of course, gives you your high resolution vision. It's also the part that has the highest metabolism, so it has the highest demand on your system, of any part of your central nervous system, actually. So the nature has put in place these carotenoids to protect this part of the retina that has sort of got the most going on, that has the most oxygen demand. So they're there to act as a protective layer.
Is there variation between individuals in their concentration, and is this known to impact on eye health?
My research found a normal distribution in the amount of macular pigments in different people, and it goes from a very low level through to a very high level, with most people sitting somewhere in the middle. And this typically agrees with most of the other research that's been done on macular pigment optical density using different devices. There's been several studies showing that there's an increased risk of AMD with lower macular pigments, and there's two that I'd like to mention just quickly. One was by Fletcher et al., the European eye study that looked at about 5,700 patients. And what they found was that blue light in general is a risk factor for developing age-related macular degeneration, although not massive. However, in a segment of the population, those that had low levels of macular pigments, vitamin A, vitamin E, and zinc, those people tended to have a much greater risk. In fact, the risk was almost as high as smoking. So whereas smoking causes about a 400% increase in the risk of AMD, low levels of macular pigments and these other vitamins and minerals caused about a 372 times, so almost as high as smoking. Another body of research was recently presented at Cambridge last summer by McGill et al., and it looked at macaques, which are a fantastic model for macular pigments in humans and their eyes in general. And what they found was that when they starved a group of macaques in a controlled study environment, they found that the normal animals developed stage 3 drusen at the age equivalent of about 65 years of age, whereas those animals that were starved of all macular pigment carotenoids got stage 3 drusen at half the age, so about 35 years of age. And if you apply that to humans, then we're looking at, as our diet gets worse and we live longer, we're looking at a serious implication in the future as this is going to become a real problem as age-related macular degeneration becomes sort of pandemic across the population.
Is diet the only influence on their concentration levels?
So diet's probably the most direct influence on macular pigment levels because you only get your macular pigments from your diet. Your lutein and zeaxanthin must be ingested from brightly colored or dark fruits and vegetables, and then the mesozeaxanthin is a conversion process from lutein. But there are other influencers on the levels of macular pigments, and these tend to be genetic and lifestyle. So obviously genetics affects the physiology of your body to uptake those macular pigments, get them out of your digestive system into your blood and then across the blood-brain barrier. barrier into the eye. Your lifestyle can have a huge impact. So things like smoking create oxidative stress on the eye, using up your macular pigments, which are the antioxidants that are protecting your retina. Obesity has an impact because the macular pigments are fat soluble. And what happens is as you're eating them, your body is sort of saying, okay, I'm going to put some away for later in my fats and some I'm going to put into my eye right away. And in our natural environment, we would be eating these things when they're ripe and then storing them through in our macular pigments for later. However, in this day and age, we no longer have a winter where we release those fats and we don't eat as much. So our bodies are actually now fighting with our eyes to get the macular pigments out of the fats and into our eyes. Another influence is sunlight exposure. So the more exposure you're getting, the more you're using up your macular pigments as the blue light's creating free radicals that then get used up by the macular pigments. And also drusen or AMD in one eye has been shown to lead to lower macular pigments. And whether that's causation or correlation, we're not sure yet.
Until now, how have clinicians been able to assess macular pigment levels? And what have been the limitations of these techniques?
So to be fair, in general, clinicians haven't really been measuring macular pigments until now, mostly because the existing technologies that are available on the market are typically too slow, difficult to use, or require pupil dilation. So it hasn't been well accepted into the industry. That being said, there are various different technologies used in research institutions. So heterochromatic flicker photometry, reflectometry, dual wavelength fundus autofluorescence, Raman spectroscopy, these are all fantastic techniques to measure macular pigments. But they just don't fit into a regular optometric practice very easily. Something new was needed to make it fast and easy enough to fit into a sort of a quick eye test.
Right. Can you now outline the newest system of macular pigment assessment that you yourself have helped to develop at Bristol University?
Yeah, I'm pleased to do that. So what we've developed is an entirely new way of assessing macular pigments. It's a new technology. And what it does is it uses the eye's natural ability to see polarized light as an effect known as Heidegger's brushes. Now, this has been known about since about 1844 when Carl von Heidegger first described it. And it's been used for a variety of different things, looking at macular dysfunction, looking at strabismus and amblyopia. But never before has it been used to look at macular pigments, which is interesting because, in fact, the reason we see Heidegger's brushes is because the existence of our macular pigments. So this new system that we've developed enables a very fast, easy, and repeatable way of assessing macular pigments that doesn't require the pupil dilation and is so easy that pretty much anybody in an optometric practice can run the test. In fact, you can even test yourself. It's that easy. We're hoping that this is the kind of thing that's going to make it fit in a bit better to clinical practice.
What were you initially investigating and what were the original aims of your research?
So I've spent about 25 years being a visual neuroethologist, studying the neural basis of behavior and vision. And in the more recent times, I was looking at polarization sensitivity in fishes, octopus, and cuttlefish. And the goal of that was to determine the limits of their polarization sensitivity or polarization vision. Because in the past, certainly octopus and cuttlefish were known to see polarized light, but we always thought that they had a very limited ability, that they could only see changes in angle of about 10 degrees. And the research I was doing was really taking a whole new approach to this. We were using dynamic images, basically polarization movies, to stimulate these animals and see just how good their vision was to detect changes in polarization. And what we found was remarkable. These animals could see changes in polarization down to less than 1 degree. And it was this that led to this new invention, because while I was setting up these systems, these sort of polarization video systems, I noticed that I could see this interesting pattern, this Heidegger's brush pattern. And I could continue to see it even when the amount of light that was polarized was very, very low. So out of curiosity, I started testing my colleagues and saying, can you see this? How well can you see it? And I test a bunch of colleagues. And I noticed there was a lot of variability. So that's when we put together a project where we studied across individuals to see just how much variation there was, and we found this lovely normal curve. And that's kind of what got us into this area, sort of recognized that this might be an exciting way to assess macular pigments.
What steps did you take to realize the potential therapeutic applications for this device?
Well, the first thing was really running that large trial at the University of Bristol and then publishing that, because we needed to prove that there was a normal distribution there, that there was something that could vary when we used this new technique of measuring macular pigments. The next step was to compare it to existing technology. So there had been various technologies available through research for quite a long time, and we need to make sure that even though they're both just correlations to a measure of macular pigments, that they matched up fairly well. So we did that with an independent trial through a research lab in Ireland, and that showed a good correlation, which was exciting. We did that against a device called the Heidelberg Spectralis, which uses dual wavelength fundus autofluorescence. And then the next step was then to see, okay, well, that's great. It does what we say it does in research. How will it work in an optometric practice? So that we brought in to London, actually, about a year or so ago, and we got 10 optometrists to try an early version of the device in their practices to see how it would work in practice. And it went remarkably well. We found out that the device could assess macular pigments in, on average, less than 53 seconds, which was great. So less than a minute, really, that it was quick, it was easy, that pretty much everyone could do the test. And that gave us a lot of confidence to then take it to the next step, which is to look for a pathway to commercialization.
How will this screening work in practice?
The patient looks into this device, we've called it the MPI, and what they will see is a small circle at the back of the device, and that circle will present polarized light to them. And the polarization, the angle polarization, is rotating constantly. So while they're looking at that, this Heidinger's brush effect is being put onto their eye, and they can't turn it off. It's there, they see it, and they say which direction it's going, so it'll be turning either clockwise or anti-clockwise. And then just like any other threshold test, like a visual acuity test where you've got the letters getting smaller, or contrast test, we make the effect harder to see, and we're looking for that cutoff threshold. At what point does the patient stop seeing the effect? And that tells us how much macular pigment they have, because if they've got lots of macular pigment, they'll keep seeing it for longer through the test. But if they've got less, they'll fall off very quickly. And that's basically the test. It's quite quick and easy. They do this. They can go up to about 10 different steps. If they see it all the way through, they've got great macular pigments. If they only get to step one or two, then they've got a little bit too little.
What impact do you see this device having on the diagnosis and prevention of AMD?
So by bringing this device into a regular eye care practice and testing people off the street, essentially, you're opening up their minds. So you're informing them about age-related macular degeneration, you're informing them about their macular pigments, and they start to understand that there's something they can do to improve their natural protection. So the idea is that we're informing them, we're then empowering them to make lifestyle changes, to do something about it, and in the long term, protecting them, because if they take some of these steps, like wearing sunglasses regularly or a hat to protect themselves, to reduce the amount of sunlight and blue light in particular getting into their eyes, if they can boost their macular pigments through diet or supplements, and certainly if they can quit smoking for example, and lose some weight and get fit, then those things will all have a really positive impact and reduce the risks of developing age-related macular degeneration later in life. And the key here is about delaying, because everyone will get AMD if they live long enough. That's just a reality. It's part of the natural aging process. But the key is if we can decrease the rate of progression, then we can delay it beyond our living years. And that's essentially prevention. And that's what we're aiming for. So my hope is that this device will help in the long term to decrease the rates of AMD around the world. And it's something that we need to work on fast, because we're all living longer, we're not eating as well, and we're exposing ourselves to more and more blue light. So it's something we can't wait to start doing.
How might this affect optometric practice in the coming years?
The advantage of this is that you can measure people even when they're young, find out that they've got a predisposition and maybe can do something about it. And then you can offer them more services. You can provide them with some of the things they can do to help protect themselves in the practice. So this is something that will not only help practices differentiate themselves, help attract more patients to the practice, it would probably also increase the revenues, because they'll be able to direct sales of these protective products to people that need them most. And as we're finding, it's surprising how many people actually need to do more.
What are your future plans in this area?
Well, so we've got the MPI now ready to be go into the commercial market, and we're already thinking about what's next for us, what the next steps would be. And one of the things that's exciting us is that unlike any previous way of assessing macular pigments, our technique is so easy that we can actually do a self-test. And what we're excited about is the prospect of coming up with perhaps a home-use device or a device that might fit into a pharmacy that might be a little bit simpler and might only have a high, medium, low type approach. And what that would do is it would inform people that they need to do something, but also might encourage them to then go and see their optometrist. So it might actually draw people into the optometry practices, because if they only get a high medium score, then they want to go in and get a more detailed score and then maybe track those changes through time. Because the interesting thing about macular pigments is you can do something about it and you can actually make it better. So you then want to track to see whether you can improve your own score.
Okay, perhaps you can summarize the implications for eye health of this new technique.
So our new macular pigment screening tool really allows optometrists to identify patients who are most at risk from AMD with respect to low macular pigments. And this allows them to provide them with bespoke advice on how they can go about protecting their eyes through life, doing things like quitting smoking, improving their diet, losing weight, and protecting their eyes from the sun. And it really, the device would become a focal point for them to have a conversation about age-related macular degeneration and how to protect their patients' eyes through life. So this new approach to macular pigment screening really allows patients to be informed about macular pigments and age-related macular degeneration. And the hope is that they would be empowered to make lifestyle changes that would help protect their vision through life.
Thank you, Dr. Temple. We look forward to seeing how this device changes the outlook for patients at risk of AMD. And I hope we'll have a chance to hear more in the future about the impact this device has had.